This is Car Expert.
The Ranger has become much, much, much better. And that's saying something because it was actually always a pretty good truck despite its age.
The i20N, I think it's so gradual, it's so communicative, and I just always felt like I knew what was happening.
Every month, Dodge is doing a thing called the Dodge 24 Months of Muscle. Oh, God, that's as masculine as I've sounded for a long time.
G'day, my name is Mandy Turner. Hello, James Wong.
Hello.
And hello, Jack Quick.
Hello.
Jack, this has been a pretty exciting week for you. This is the first time you've covered motor shows. And it's obviously great to have motor shows back up and running as well. But what's the experience been like for you?
Yeah, so I'm still pretty fresh to Car Expert. I've been full-time now for about 3 months. And I haven't been to any in-person reveals or motor shows, et cetera, yet. But happening concurrently at the moment is the LA Motor Show in the US and the Guangzhou Motor Show in China. And there's been all sorts of going. I've been kind of run off my feet, just forever writing and typing, and my fingers are becoming little nubs, little red nubs, trying to type it.
There's been all sorts of,
oh, not really, but anyway, there's been so much happening, so many cars that have been released, and a lot of electric vehicle startups that have been putting their little 2 cents in and saying, oh, I say 2 cents, and it takes millions of dollars to create a car, but announcing vehicles, Tesla rivals, commercial vehicles, blah blah blah. It's been insane. I've got a little list here of vehicles that I've written about in the last week or so, because it's been a pretty intense week, as I've already said. So, in first of all, I've got the Edison Future light commercial EVs. Edison Future, not to be confused with Edison Motors, which is a South Korean company that's in the works of buying SsangYong. Funnily enough, Edison Future is going to create and manufacture a ute and a van that looks like a SsangYong Musso. So that's confusing as it is, but anyway. And then I've also written about the Audi Q5 e-tron, which is going to be a China-only special based on the MEB platform, and not to be confused with the upcoming Audi Q6 e-tron, which is going to be a PPE-based vehicle. That's going to be exciting. I've got the XPeng G9, which is a large SUV. I'll tell you what, all of the motor shows have been releasing so many different large SUVs, say, for example, the Kia EV9 concept and the Ioniq 7. It's kind of been the year for large electric SUVs. So, and then I've also got another SUV. I've got the one called the Mullen 5, which you might know about, and neither did I until I wrote it, I'm not going to lie. It's an American startup from South California that has ambitious dreams of making a Model S rivaling, or Model 3, like Tesla rivaling, SUV, got a lot of money, and I think they've got big plans, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. I reckon it's going to fall flat. And then VinFast E35 and E36, I've talked about those previously, but they're Vietnamese vehicles are going to be making their way to US and the US and Europe. And VinFast is the people that set up shop in Australia and are in the process of selling Lang Lang. And then Fisker Ocean, you might have heard about the Fisker brand before. And then last of all, the one I've been building up to is a new spin-off brand from Great Wall Motors called Saloon, and they've revealed a car called the Mecha Dragon. It's so bizarre. It looks like an Audi A7 / Porsche Panamera with kind of like a lift back, fast back look, but it's got like some GTA Cyberpunk 2077 looks. It's all angular and like matte, and it's got like riveted wheel arches and active spoilers, and it's all very bizarre and all very exclusive to China, as far as I'm aware at this stage. So lots have been happening. I should probably shush now about this because I could probably talk forever.
Well, Jabo, do you remember the first time you did your first motor show coverage? Because I feel like it was long nights and many stories written.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, talking about Jack's first motor show. I can't remember which one it was exactly, because There were so many when I first started because we didn't have COVID. Yeah. So, but I do remember there were quite a few times where, especially for the American ones, because of the time difference, you're staying up till quite late, punching them out in the office. That was before they started sending everyone press packets ahead of time. So I remember being up until like 9 or 10 in the office with my manager at the time, covering all the new releases. And some of the, like, I'm not sure what it was like for you this time around, Jack, because I didn't see all the press kits that came through, but some of the very major global releases from brands like Mercedes-Benz or whatever, some of their press kits are really bloody long. So to try and condense that into a news story, which you try to bash out in 2 hours or something like that and get it in real time, it's a really hard task. So the fact that you reeled off so many different cars that you've covered in the last week, plus can speak so in depth about them and so passionately, clearly we've got the right person on the job because you've done it. You clearly know your stuff. But it's fun. I've always wanted to go to an American or a European motor show. I was lucky enough to go to the Shanghai one a few years ago, which the scale that the Chinese do things these days is insane. Like the convention center that we were at is shaped like a four-leaf clover, and each clover leaf is home to two halls. And there was a motor show. There was a motor show basically in every hall. And I think that day I probably walked about 15, 20 kilometers. It was insane.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was a cool experience.
Speaking of walking kilometers, I remember the 2018 Goodwood Festival Speed I attended. 18 kilometers. I actually opened up my phone and in one day I walked 18 kilometers. I felt like I ran about 5 of those, going from interview to interview with the different times, because that's a massive place as well. But you just don't realize it until you sit down. Mm. I was like, bloody hell, that was a big day.
Yeah, because it's such a rush as well, because you're so excited. You see so many different things. You've got all these people to speak to, and that's one thing I hope will come back. And, for younger journos like myself and Jack and people who haven't really been able to experience that yet, the whole rush of going to an international motor show, and even if we get a lot of the stuff under embargo these days, being able to have the novelty of seeing an in-person reveal and speaking to executives that are based out of Europe or the US that we wouldn't normally speak to in Australia, and just being able to run around and see all the different things. When I was growing up, the Melbourne Motor Show was a highlight of the calendar. I used to go with my dad every year. And it's something that I think, even though I understand why a lot of manufacturers aren't prioritizing it anymore, there's just something about it as a car nut that being able to see that many things in one spot is just, there's nothing like it. So, it's good to see motor shows are up and running again.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Well, we're going to talk about some more news right now. And we're over to you first, Jay Woe, for some Hyundai Ioniq 5 news. Tell us more.
Yeah, so I've bashed out a few stories from this Hyundai event I did a week ago, and I spoke to a very talkative young man by the name of Tim Rogers, who is Hyundai Australia's product development manager. And it was quite interesting because he looks a little bit like me, and apparently he gets that in the office a lot. So that was a fun story to exchange over dinner. So this one in particular, I asked him a few questions about the Hyundai Ioniq 5. Which just got released in Australia, and it was released in very limited numbers. So only about 240 units were in the first allocation that is due to arrive in Australia before the end of 2021. And so when they released pricing a couple of months ago, they sort of promised that they're looking into expanding not only the allocation offering, but also the amount of variants and all that kind of thing. So I think they're looking to bring in the full 400 cars that they initially promised within the first quarter of 2022. And then, so I also asked him, what are the plans from there? Because obviously across the globe, there are two different battery variants. You can get a couple of different trim levels. There's a few features that we miss out on. He wasn't super in depth about it because I think they're constantly in discussion about these things. And he basically said to me that at the moment, every car that they can get is being sold. So what they're doing because of that is sticking with that high trim level range structure for the moment. So they've basically got one variant that you can get either in two-wheel drive or all-wheel drive with the same battery pack. But he was saying that in the year to come that their volume opportunity will expand, and they're hoping to get decent volume with that car, but obviously not where they'd like it to be. Because when they started opening up orders and expressions of interest, they had like 10,000 applications from customers, you know, interested in the car that were almost willing to put down at a deposit. And when you only have 400 cars, it's hard to sort of split that evenly. And I sort of posed the question to him, you know, Kia has said they're getting 500 or 600 EV6s next year. Is that the similar situation that you're going to get? And while he couldn't confirm actual numbers, he sort of indicated there's a few changes that are being talked about spec-wise. So that there'll be changes next year, but at the very beginning, it's likely to be minor. So I assume once that first allocation of 400 cars is exhausted, we might see a minor change, maybe first half of 2022 for the remainder of that first year of production. And then later in the year, he said that they were sort of looking into other things, like perhaps offering different trim levels or offering different battery sizes. There's a couple of features in the Korean market, for example, that we don't get at the moment, which include the digital side mirrors. And I don't know if you guys have seen any of the Korean market videos on IONIQ 5, but like the Audi e-tron, you can get them with like cameras instead of the side mirrors, and they put like little tablet video feeds in the corners up the front so that you have a live video feed of the side of the car instead of physical mirrors, which is meant to also help with aerodynamics, because the camera lenses are obviously much thinner than you get in actual mirrors. And then also, instead of a panoramic glass roof, which globally is usually an option, but we get it as standard in Australian models, is that you can also get a solar roof panel, which trickle charges the battery while the vehicle's parked. So one of the things that Hyundai head office did when they revealed the IONIQ 5 was sort of showcase their vehicle to load, or V2L technology, which basically means that you can use your IONIQ 5, or most of the new Hyundai Kia electric vehicles, for that matter, have bi-directional charging capability. So you can basically put an adapter on the charging port and then power something out of it. So at the global reveal, they had like an array of IONIQ 5 set up as like mini campsites. So you could have like lamps out the front, or power tools, or things like that. So I imagine that if somebody is fairly remote, and in Australia we have plenty of sun, they can park it out and the solar panel's running, and you can, you know, make a coffee or give yourself a haircut or power a tent light, or I don't know what camping people do. I'm too much of a diva for this stuff. So I imagine it would be helpful. You could charge your phone or your laptop if you're working remotely. So there's some really cool opportunities there that they haven't really tapped into yet, because they don't have the supply. I imagine that if they're able to bring that shorter range battery, that they'd be able to dip the starting price below 70 grand. But then at that point, are you competing too close with the Kona Electric? I don't know. So I imagine the reason why he didn't give me too much detail is because I imagine in those product development meetings, there are so many variables, so many things that you're chatting about, and they constantly have to move the goalposts, because they say, if we want to bring in a cheaper one, what does that mean for Kona? If we want to bring in more features, where does that place us against Tesla? It's super interesting, and I imagine that they're also keeping a very close eye on Kia across the road, because once they bring in the EV6, they've got an in-house competitor too. But I recently drove the IONIQ 5 for the first time, and I was very impressed. I love the look of it. I think that it drives really nice. I know that Paul and what's his name? Oh, Scott. complained about the high speed ride on country highway. So I did sort of notice it's a bit floaty, but I think that they just look cool, and it gets you so many looks that if you want to stand out a little bit, why not?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Did Tim actually say how surprised he was at how quickly those orders were filled?
I think they sort of anticipated a lot of interest, because, you know, the car had been revealed a while ago. Not that car expert comments are the gauge of whether a car is going to sell or not, but clearly a lot of people saw this car and thought it was really cool. And Hyundai is really transitioning to this like vehicle of the future mantra that they're pushing at the moment. So I think what they may have been initially shocked by the interest, but I think in terms of the demand, they expect it based off the interest, but they unfortunately just can't satisfy the amount of people that want to buy one, because we've had people mail in carexpert.com.au, so you've got to write that down, and complain that they had the online sales portal crash on them. So imagine like trying to some of us have bought iPhones before or whatever, and you get to that, you know, press add to cart or pay now, and then something fails last minute, and it must be heartbreaking. And for such a cool car, I imagine there's a lot of like super fanboys or and girls that want to get their hands on one that just haven't been able to so far. So I hope I hope that we see the supply open up, because not because I hate Tesla or anything, but you know, it's good to see more competitors in the market. And if it's something like that that's going to get people into zero emissions cars, why not? We want to see more choice. I'm a huge advocate for consumer choice. And while I may not like 100%. Everything on the market, I know that every car has a role for somebody. And I think that especially when it comes to low emissions vehicles, we need to see more cars on the market. We can't see, you know, Tesla monopolizing it and then, you know, Toyota with hybrid technology. We need to see more manufacturers do it. So we see prices be standardized, we see more choice, so that, you know, in times like we have now where supply is so tight across the board that, you know, you can't get a RAV4, but you might be able to get a Sportage hybrid, which, you know, at the moment you can't do, but that kind of thing. So yeah, I think it'll be within their interest to do so, to try and free up more stock. So hopefully they can come through with that.
Yeah, well, that perfectly leads into our next story in trying to get more cars on the road. Jack, MG Australia is supplying up to 3,000 EV chargers for rural hotels. This is actually a really cool thing they're doing.
It is pretty cool. So, yeah, as you said, Mandy, MG Australia is going to be supplying up to 3,000 EV chargers to three-star regional hotels and resorts. There's going to be two different options, with one on single-phase power and then the other on three-phase power. So the single-phase power EV charger can charge at speeds of up to 7.7 kilowatts, whereas the three-phase charger can do 11 kilowatts of charging speeds. So this isn't flash DC fast charging. It's just pretty typical AC. So nothing too flash, but it's at a hotel and a resort, or like just where you're going to be parking your car for the night. So it's not a really big deal that it's going to take a little while to charge, but you have the option there. It's pretty cool that MG is investing up to 3,000. I know, for example, from Melbourne, if I want to travel home to my family's farm, I know that these charges aren't ideal for that. But I'll think of an example. If I want to go, say, to Mansfield or up to somewhere remote, like that in-between stage out of Melbourne, and there's limited options if I don't have a Tesla at this stage. So having these extra AC destination charges is going to be helpful. I think the more that we have of them, the better. But MG isn't the only brand that's doing this. It's not new news in a sense. It's new that MG is doing it. at the moment, Tesla and Porsche are already invested in these kind of destination charges at hotels, wineries, and restaurants all around Australia. So it's not new, but it's great to have some more options and to be able to charge up your car as once we can get some in Australia, I suppose. So MG at the moment currently offers an HS plug-in hybrid and also an all-electric ZS EV in its electric lineup. So only two at this stage, but I'm guessing this is going to be growing. And then all the other manufacturers that have automakers that have electric cars will be able to use these chargers too, which is awesome. So more chargers, the better. And I wrote down here as a point, range anxiety, which I think is really good, because like I imagine all of these destination chargers are going to be just the dotted around at places where there wasn't something before. I don't know exactly, and I can't confirm that, but it'll just be filling in the gaps, filling in the gray areas, which is super handy. But this kind of feeds into when I was last on the podcast, when I was chatting with Crawf about the different, the charging infrastructure benefits and things like that, and how Australia as a whole isn't giving more subsidies towards EVs, and they're just kind of going ham for EV chargers. We're giving them more, but we know it's like, we can't get them, first of all. And even if we do, there's like limited amounts for the most part. And then they're expensive. So it's kind of limiting to a certain extent. It's great to have all these chargers at some stage, but we need the cars. So I reckon it's a good step, but there's more work to do, I reckon. It's very, very interesting to see what it's going to be like in a couple of years' time, I reckon. So, yeah.
Now, the next story, Jaywo, the 2022 Nissan GT-R T-Spec is going to be touching down in Australia. It's going to be the final R35.
Yes, very different to the electric cars we were just talking about. So one of the last Godzilla to come into Australia has finally landed, and it's been complied for local roads, and it's in midnight purple, and it is a T-spec car. Now, I'm not 100% across what that all means because, you know, GTRs have had T-spec, V-spec, something spec. anyone who's played a Gran Turismo from 3 to 4, whatever, you go to the Nissan showroom and there's about 50 different Skylines that all have the same power output but all look slightly different. But yeah, so there's fewer than 50 of the new GTRs will be arriving in the final model year. Unfortunately, like a couple of other cars that we've seen lately, the new GTR doesn't meet Australia's latest design rules, something to do with the side impact laws, which I'm not, ADR, I'm sure many manufacturers just hear ADR and they shut down because Australia thinks it's special. Apparently, we can't just unify our laws with Europe. So the T-Spec is somewhere between the standard premium and premium luxury models, as well as the and then on top of that, there's the GTR Nismo and Nismo SV. The SV is a really interesting looking one because it gets this clear coat carbon fiber bonnet, red exterior accents, and 20-inch raised aluminium forged wheels. And each model comes with a different version of that same 3.8-litre twin turbocharged V6. It's sort of a sad day, isn't it? Because, you know, this car has been around for so long. It's been around for like over 10 years. And even now, there's something about it that's quite cool and the performance is still insane. And what something I really enjoyed with this 22 model year range is that they sort of brought back some of the heritage colors. So that midnight purple is a very iconic GTR color. They had like the Millennium Jade green. You could get it with this weird pearlescent greeny purple color. You could get a green interior in some of them. It's quite cool. It's just a shame to see. I guess we're finally seeing the effects of many global variables that are going to start changing the industry. We don't know when there's going to be a new GTR or if there's going to be a new GTR yet, but there are a lot of reports out of Japan suggesting that there will be one. I assume it will be electrified in some way, whether it's a hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or all electric, I don't know. But Nissan's been going very hard for the last few years about its what was the line they gave me when I was a very young journo and covered their vision? Like vision for future mobility or something like that. And it's very much about all electric zero emissions vehicles, bi-directional charging, having a very good and intricate infrastructure where everything sort of feeds off each other. So maybe, who knows, we might see the next GTR come out as this electric, insanely fast spaceship looking thing. So who knows? I imagine they're still a few years away from it, but at the same time with the new Z, they're sort of playing old school with it. So I don't know whether they'll do the same with the GTR.
Yeah, so I just wanted to quickly clear up something that I said in the last time I was on the podcast too about when we're talking about this next report on this next GTR potentially called the R36. I know Crawf and I got a little bit confused and muddled in our words, but I'm pretty certain from what I remember, writing the article, I meant to say on the podcast that the Nissan executive that was speaking was talking about how the company doesn't need electrification to be the most powerful sports car or sport GTR in the world, but this electrification will just take it to the next level. So electrification is on Nissan's horizons. They see it. Is it going to happen? I'm not certain, but I think as you talked about, James, just briefly, how the Nissan Z is kind of going to be this halo vehicle for the moment of sorts. And I bet I can guarantee almost that it's going to be what Nissan Australia is going to be trying to clamber for and just put it right to the top of their tree. And it's going to be super cool. I'm looking forward to it. We'll have to see about GTR. Look at that. Yeah.
If we get it here, indeed.
That's another story entirely. Yeah.
Yes. Well, we're going to stick to fast cars. Jack, the Dodge is killing off the Hellcat, but a new Charger and Challenger is coming in a couple of years.
Isn't it sad? But the Hellcat, it's such a crazy engine. It's going to be such a sad thing when it goes away. So a report by Motor Trend is signifying that Dodge is going to be ending the production of the Hellcat engine. It's going to be no longer. And in turn, Dodge is going to be heading towards electrification, going to be pushing for electrification. In the meantime, though, Dodge is going to be doing what's called buzz vehicles. It's kind of leading up to this electric vehicle that's all elusive and crazy and going to be super cool. And an executive has called it a very, very, very significant car. So it must be significant if I must say myself.
Very significant.
So with the killing off of this Hellcat V8 engine, we're not going to be seeing, it's kind of hard to say, but we're going to be seeing new versions of the Challenger and the Charger. And some kind of rough things here is going to be an electric car concept revealed in 2022. And then there's also going to be a plug-in hybrid Dodge sports car of sorts in 2023. And a publication called Mopar Insiders have reported that this next-gen electric crazy Dodge vehicle, it's going to have some elements of the 1999 Charger RT concept, which to me kind of just looks like a PT Cruiser of sorts. It's all very bubbly and blah, 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 blah.
Not a good compliment either, is it?
Anyway, I reckon it's going to, as I said, it's going to be significant. So who am I to say? My name is just Jack Quick and I'm from Australia and I'm not American. I'm not even going to get it in Australia, but we'll have to see. some other things that this publication, Mopars Insiders, has reported that in the meantime, before this electric car is released, there's going to be some sort of mild hybrid Hemi V8 and also a turbocharged 3-litre inline six engine. So there's going to be some kind of electrification to build, bridge the gap, as I've talked about with the plug-in hybrids. And it's not really confirmed yet, but there's all sorts that's going to be happening. Leading up every month, Dodge is doing a thing called the Dodge 24 Months of Muscle. Oh, God, that's as masculine as I've sounded for a long time. So it's pretty all of the imagery is so macho and they're really trying to push this electric vehicle as a masculine, crazy performance vehicle, and I'm interested to see what it's going to be like performance wise visually, etc., etc. But it's a sad time. No more Hellcat in the near future, very much like the GTR is right now. It's kind of like where start of this paradigm shift. Well, it's already happening, to be honest, but this push to electric. And so I was going to say that at the moment the Hellcat engine has kind of reached its pinnacle with the Challenger Demon that produces 626 kilowatts of power and 1,043 newton meters of torque on race fuel, which is insane. I reckon maybe Dodge might be able to do this with an electric powertrain, potentially. I don't know. It sounds achievable just with all of the figures that I've been writing about, with all of the electric vehicles coming up from startups, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's, with Dodge backing, it's pretty hopeful to be in that kind of ballpark of performance. For something more local, I think most recently the Ram 1500 TRX, which has the supercharged 6.2-litre V8, super crazy, too much for Australian roads, I reckon, but very cool and insane fuel economy, and as you talked about, Mandy, but 20, 30 litres per 100Ks. Yes, it's going to be a big change for Dodge as they go from this kind of dirty image of the V8 to this slim line but still kind of macho electric lineup that is in the future. It's going to be super cool. I love it.
Yeah, looking forward to see how that's going to come out. All right, that's it for this week's news. Head to the site if you would like to know more. Yay, the all-new 2022 Ford Ranger has been revealed. We could probably have a whole podcast just on this because it's a pretty important model for Ford. Isn't that right, Paul Marrick?
Yes, it is, and I do apologise if there's crying in the background. It's not Mike Costello. It's my baby. She's just had vaccination. So, but, yes, the Ford Ranger. I'll tell you what, this is sort of very close to Land Cruiser 300 series in terms of the level of interest we've had on the site in terms of people wanting to know more and more about it. And it reached fever pitch yesterday at the time of recording this because we had sat through a global media conference where they explained what the car was all about, what it was coming with. And then we also went to the global reveal where they flew, I think it was five cars into Australia so they could simultaneously show them to media and dealers around the country at these pretty sort of swanky events. And the highlight there is that the Ranger has become much, much, much better. And that's saying something because it was actually always a pretty good truck despite its age. So I'm talking about some changes to the wheelbase and the track. So 50 mil each way, which means it has a more confident stance on the road. You've got a kind of company front end with C-shaped LED headlights, matrix LED now for the first time, which is really good to see. They've tucked recovery points under the front end too, so it will be capable of doing off-road driving. New tubular design, which means they've actually got functional air vents on either sides of the car. The way that they've set up the structure as well is everything is centralized, and it means that this car can share engines across left and right-hand drive, which means you can mount everything central, and then all you need to move is the steering column and the interior components. So that's exciting news because it means that it looks like we're going to get access to some petrol engines. And right at the end of the reveal last night, they showed a little teaser of the Raptor, and you could hear quite clearly what sounded like a V6 turbo petrol engine. Other highlights include two sets of four-cylinder diesels. One is a single turbo, the other a twin turbo. I suspect that'll be a carryover from the current one, which is 500 newton meters, 10-speed auto. But the most exciting news for Aussie punters is a new V6 diesel. So it's a Lion diesel, which means it was used previously in the F-150. It's currently discontinued in that car. But it was previously used in things like Discovery 5, Range Rover Sport before they moved to Ingenium engines. So that's all pretty cool on the outside. Inside the cabin, giant 12-inch display with Sync 4, which means wireless Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, over-the-air updates with the car capable of updating something like 50 modules within the car. So if anything goes wrong in the future, they can just deploy those updates. Pretty cool setup in the tray as well. Step to get things out of there now. LED lighting around the car, which you can configure in zones. So you can actually light up the ground around the car 360 degrees and then set up zones for it. So if you park up against a wall or something, it'll just light up all the areas to the other side of the car as you approach it. So yeah, really comprehensive setup. And I am very excited to drive it. What did you guys think about the design?
It's pretty cool. Pretty cool. It's just enough has changed that it looks the same, but it's different in a good way. I think that's a good way of putting it, at least in my head, at least. I love the orange. I know that we've already seen the orange before, but this orange looks really cool. And I love the little things that they've added, in particular, like the side, the step in the back, like you've mentioned, Paul, and the few of the different accessory things, like I wrote down here, the clamp.
The tailgate, was it?
Yeah, off the tailgate. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one. And then the roof, the rails on the tub. And then also you also noticed it too, Paul, but the little trailer controller, braking controller in what was most likely a US spec model. But I thought it was really interesting how Ford is almost taking away all of like the accessory companies. Forte, like Red Arc, for example, that they do like trailer controls, and you might also talk about this in a little bit, but ARB and the partnership with Ford and creating bull bar accessories, blah blah blah, and then kind of throwing all the other accessory companies aside and leaving them at a disadvantage. I thought I think it's pretty cool. A long-winded way of saying it's very cool and going to be, as you said, Paul, a little expensive, I reckon. It looks flash.
The design, I think, will grow on me. I'm not sure if I was a huge fan of the latest F-Series truck light signature at the front to begin with. I honestly think that the current Ranger is one of the best-looking utes on sale. I think it's a very resolved look. It really, all the light elements and the creases all sort of sit well into the bodywork, and it's a very, very nice design. This new one looks, I think the new one in the high grades looks all right, and I'm sure it'll come together much better in person. I didn't join Paul and Scott at the event last night, but I heard a lot of good things. What I'm really interested in, and this is probably the techie nerd in me coming out, is the all the stuff that they've announced for, like, the infotainment, the matrix LED headlights, all the driver assistance systems, and some of the engine tech too. That the addition of V6 is a really big addition, because even though the Volkswagen Amarok has had it for years, we haven't really seen any of the other manufacturers get on board with that yet. Mercedes came and went with the X-Class, and it was sort of priced out of contention anyway. So I think having the way that they've set it up, it looks like there's going to be a very, very big spread of variants, price points, capabilities, all that kind of thing. So the fact that Ranger is already so popular, and a lot of the upgrades or developments they've made to the model line for this new generation have been based on customer feedback. And as somebody that actually did work at Ford for a period of time when they were sort of talking about these things internally, it's quite interesting to see how it all has come to fruition. And I think that, you know, they've already been making a very good truck that's been around for a long time. This thing is just going to take it to another level. And I can't imagine this not being a top seller unless everyone suddenly decides that utes aren't their thing anymore.
Paul, how do you think it will be priced compared to its tight competitors?
Yeah, look, I think this is Ford's opportunity to really ramp the price up, especially for Raptor. I mean, if they're going to drop a petrol V6 in that, and you look at some of the components they'll be able to pull out of the Bronco, given they share a platform now, I mean, I can picture that being a $100,000 car. And I think you look at some of the things they've added to this, this is probably going to command another $5,000 or $10,000 to that purchase price. It will be interesting, though, because in the market now, you're going to have the Chinese utes, which are cheap and cheerful and varying degrees of good. You've then got the mid-tier sort of vehicles like your Triton, which is a value proposition. Then you have new entrants like the D-Max and existing ones like Hilux, which are always a little expensive, especially D-Max now where they've removed driveway pricing on some of those models. I think that top tier is going to have to do some adjustments, because when you look at this side-by-side with a Hilux feels decidedly ancient compared to this, especially with the lack of a V6. The infotainment is just pretty terrible in a Hilux. It just lacks a lot of the features that this new Ranger has. So, look, I mean, some people are dyed-in-the-wool sort of Toyota fans. It'll be hard to really get them across. But at the end of the day, I think this could be the reason you switch from a Hilux to a Ford. And I really, really hope that they've done all of the engineering homework, because no one wants to buy the first of anything. And if you buy one of these and it's a dud, it's really going to sully the hard work that they've done here. And I think it is also worth calling out that when we did the global product presentation, it was fantastic to hear so many Australian voices on the call as subject matter experts, because this car is engineered here in Australia. It's designed here in Australia out of Melbourne. So it really has deep roots within Australia. And I think that's even more reason to back it and to go and test drive one when they finally come out.
Mm. When are they coming out?
Look, it'll be Q1 next year. We're expecting to hear more about Everest late this year, early next year. Raptor, they'll announce February next year. So I think that getting a car in a dealership will probably be maybe March or April next year. What do you reckon, James?
I think they said something closer to the middle of 2022. So I think that's when you'll see customer deliveries coming in and things like that. They'll probably do like a pre-sales campaign and all that kind of stuff. Just to sort of tack on to the end of your comment before, Paul, about the pricing, I think there's a few opportunities here where Ford obviously wants to do a little bit better in the 4x2 segments, because that's where Hilux owns it. And then at the top end with Raptor, there's also like a gap between where the current Raptor sits and where like Ram V8 pickups sort of sit. And I think if they can do what they did with Mustang, where because they can get it like the V6 turbo petrol from the factory rather than any sort of conversion or whatever, we could actually see it be really competitive in terms of pricing in that 80 to 90 grand bracket. And imagine if people are willing to buy a Ram at the moment, an old 1500 for like 90 to 100 grand, can you imagine how many of these V6 twin turbo Raptors they're going to sell? Because they're not really being bought for towing 3.5-ton caravans. They're being bought as lifestyle vehicles. And the fact now that you can get all this infotainment tech that you can't even get in a, well, I was going to say Mondeo, but that doesn't exist anymore. But, you know, it's just the kind of tech that you get in a luxury car of the same price, but then you get a tray, you get, you know, off-road capability, towing capability or whatever. Like, this is probably one of the first times I can look at a truck and be like, oh, yeah, you know, there might be something that I would consider if I ever needed that kind of capability. Because normally, you know, the last 5 or 10 years is as Utes have sort of come up the sales ranks. A lot of them, they're still very agricultural and not great to live with day to day. They're big, they're clumsy, they're not super safe, or they're made terribly. Whereas this really seems to change that narrative. And I hope that this will actually be a pioneer for the Ute segment in the next half decade to decade, where we see them actually really come up to where passenger cars are now, because I don't think a lot of buyers actually understand the differences there. Because, you know, we've seen a lot of tests around braking and handling and all those kind of things, and people don't really realize those things. So I think this is really exciting and a really big signal of what's to come.
Any final thoughts, Paul, before we wrap up?
No, I'm just really looking forward to driving it, especially the Raptor. I think that will finally put some hair on my chest.
Maybe another viral video for you, Paul, doing jumps.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. That. Well, the walk around of the all-new Ford Ranger is up at Car Expert now. Thank you, Paul Marrick.
Thank you, guys.
Jarrah, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, you spent some time behind the wheel of a Hyundai i20N. It's so cute, but is it so fast?
See, I think it would be offended if you called it cute, because it looks like the kind of car that would be like, don't call me cute, I'm a badass. You know, like looking up at you, being like, new, 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 new. Yes, so I was the first launch I've done in a very long time in person. So that was a bit interesting, going up to New South Wales on a plane and driving something and meeting people in person and seeing other journalists. Wow. There was a lot going on. Especially considering I had to wake up at 4 a.m. to get to the airport. There was a lot for me to process with not a lot of brain capacity.
Wow.
So the i20N, I think it's already been on sale for a little bit, but unfortunately because of COVID lockdowns around the country, they weren't able to have a proper media launch for it. So we were able to go out and experience this car, which has been met with pretty big critical acclaim in other markets. I'm pretty sure in the UK it won like the Top Gear Car of the Year or something like that. So, you know, that's a big award in this industry. So, you know, sometimes these cars come with a lot of hype and then don't really meet up to it. So I was very interested to have a go at it and see what happens, because, you know, I'm sure you all remember a few years ago when the i30N came out, it was a similar story where everyone raved about it and some people sort of loved it, some people were kind of like, I'm not so sure about it, because obviously in that segment there's a lot of really good options. And it's the same here, you know, we've got the Ford Fiesta ST and the Volkswagen Polo GTI, two vehicles competing in the same segment but very, very different approaches. The Fiesta is all about fun and, you know, trackability, whereas the Volkswagen is sort of meant to be like the Golf, more of an everyday driver and a bit of a GT. It has a 1.6-litre turbocharged four-cylinder petrol engine, which is familiar in the sense that it's pretty similar to the engine that you find in like the Serato GT, the Kona N-Line, the i30 N-Line and whatnot. In this application, it makes 150 kilowatts and 275 newton meters, so it's gotten a bit of a torque bump over the non-N cars that this engine is used in. And it also has an overboost function that increases torque to 304 newton meters when under full throttle between 2000 and 4,000 RPM. As I noted before, drivers channeled through a 6-speed manual transmission and a Torsen mechanical limited slip differential on the front axle. The manual shifter has a reinforced clutch, upgraded friction materials and redesigned synchros, as well as having a auto downshift function. No, I wouldn't say that I'm a complete novice at manual these days. Mandy's been there when I couldn't drive manual and we ended up driving that that Audi S1 from Sydney to Melbourne. That was a fun experience.
But you spilled it through two sets of lights?
Yes, right at the end too, when we were about to get home. That's a story for another day with a different banner on the website. But yes, so it has an auto rev matching function. So when you're on track and you're not super confident in heel and toeing like myself, you can get the perfect downshift and get around the corner nice and quickly. Zero to 100 claim is 6.2 seconds, and it'll hit a top speed of 230 kilometers an hour, which you'll probably never do in Australia, even on a racetrack, because unless you're on the Bathurst straight, I can't imagine you getting it that fast with unless you're going downhill with a heavy crosswind. So talk about the driving and what it's got. So we don't get the normal i20 in Australia anymore. So this is the only i20 that we get, similar to what Ford's done with the Fiesta. It looks much meaner. It's very angular. The back end gets quite a little bit of controversy because it's got this funny light signature. There's like on the end, there's like a black roof bit that sort of extends into the tailgate. Then it goes into the normal paint. There's like plastic cladding and things like that. It's certainly a very interesting design. It looks very different to the Fiesta and the Polo, which are a little bit cleaner. The interior is really cool. You've got N bucket seats. You've got the N steering wheel. You've got dual 10.25-inch displays. So unlike the i30N, which still persists with a more conventional analog gauge cluster, this is sort of appealing to these youthful types that maybe have grown up with iPads and, you know, MSN and stuff. I don't know. so you've got a digital instrument cluster and a big widescreen infotainment system. And one of the cool things that we showcased on the event, because we actually got to drive them on track at Wakefield Park Raceway in Goulburn, is that they have this new N track maps function. So you can actually load in the GPS data of a race circuit, sort of like in Gran Turismo, and you can actually time your laps and have it geotag you around the circuit. So I did try that out. It seems to know where the finish line is, and it felt me go, and it gave me like a split between three laps. I managed to go around Wakefield Park, and I don't know if anyone listening really has a good idea of what a good lap in Wakefield Park is, but I did about a 1 minute 15, which is about 5 seconds off a professional racing driver, which for me, am sort of proud of, because I was very, very conservative on some of the high-speed braking at the end of the straight, because I think I got this thing up to about 170 at one point on the main straight. Damn. Yeah, it hammers. And that was something that really impressed me, was that I think it sort of is somewhere between the Fiesta and the Polo in terms of its ability. It does have that track capability. It may not quite be as sharp or as raw as maybe the Fiesta is, but it certainly can dial. We had a very short stint in town, and you know, it's obviously quite firm, but it's got all the tech and safety features and stuff that if you were to drive it as a daily, you'd be able to have a little bit of fun. It's also a bit more spacious than a Fiesta, not quite as big as a Polo, but more spacious than a Fiesta. So you're sort of seeing a common theme here. It's somewhere in between. And I think that's what we've sort of noticed with Hyundai's N products. We found with the i30, not quite as hard as a Focus ST or a Megane RS, but still a lot of fun, but not quite as soft and comfortable as a Golf GTI or a Golf R. And that was sort of what I found driving this car in isolation. The drive program was quite intensive. We drove, I drove it from Campbelltown in Sydney Southwest down to our lunch spot, which was in, I think the town was called Berry. And we had this like weird foresty mountainy drive route on that first leg.
Great drive. I've been around there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We had some fantastic roads. So props to Hyundai's team for finding an amazing drive route. So yeah, we did some like mountain climbs. There was some of that really twisty, skinny forest road stuff. And you really got to, this one thing that I really enjoyed about this car was, even though it's not, you know, blisteringly fast like something like an A45 or an RS3 or whatever, it's compact enough, but also powerful enough that you can really have some fun and go quite quickly, but also be confident because it's so communicative. The steering, the chassis, the balance is all so well-tuned and well-calibrated so that you never feel like you've lost connection with the road. And especially once we got to the track component, because I drove the i20N after the Kona N, and I can't actually talk about the Kona N for another week, so I will cease my comments on that right there. But one thing I really loved about the i20 was just how confident I felt. I'm not somebody that's super experienced on the racetrack. So going out there and sort of being given free rein and watching some of the other journos whiz past me on the main straight, it's a little bit daunting. And you're like, okay, I'll sort of test its limits a little bit. And I never felt like I was going to lose control. I never felt like I misjudged anything. It really just, it's so gradual. It's so communicative. And I just always felt like I knew what was happening. And then it would sort of be like, come on, go harder, go harder, go harder.
And, and actually, you know what? What you're saying reminds me of an MX5.
Yeah. Exactly. And I had a stint in an MX-5 on track maybe at the beginning of the year as well. And I had that same feeling, obviously, with a front-wheel drive chassis, it's a little bit different in terms of balance. But yeah, as you would know, Mandy, having driven an MX-5 a little bit harder, it's sort of that same thing. But I would actually argue that the i20N is probably a little bit faster because it's got that turbo boost.
Definitely.
And it just fires for the horizon. And that's something I really enjoyed. And then I actually rode shotgun with Brendan Reeves, who's a WRC driver who was on hand to take you around for hot laps. And when he took me in the i20, oh my god, this guy has so apparently the
did
i20,
you scream?
No, luckily no, and no one has it on camera if I did, so you can take my word for it. But yeah, so apparently the i20N has very strong genetic links to the next generation of Hyundai's WRC car. There's like this really cool concept called the i20 WR2 or something like that. There's it's some funky name, but the next generation rally car has a lot of direct links to this, similar to how the GR Yaris has very strong links to the rally car as well. Now, this isn't quite a homologation special, but they say the links are there. And so watching Brendo take this thing and wring its neck around the track, you could just see how he just knew what was doing, and it didn't squirrel about. He was like, you know exactly what it's doing. He was able to talk to me while driving like an absolute madman, as if we were just having a conversation on the freeway. And to again, even in the passenger seat, I never felt like the car was going to lose it or anything like that. You could get some lift off oversteer. You can downshift a little bit harder and, you know, try to get the revs up and really push it. And then, you know, all that kind of thing. I'm not super familiar with like short shifting and all those kind of terms. But Wakefield has a couple of really tricky turns, and there's this, I think it's called the fish hook, where you sort of come around and then there's that really long sweeping left hander. That's the first half of the track, which is quite tricky to nail. And, with the i20N, I think just the way that diff works, it just puts the power down and you rarely get any understeer or anything like that. It was just really, really fun and really, a good way to sort of get out, and you know, you feel like you've achieved something, you've done a good job, and you don't feel like an absolute noob. That's how I felt with this car, and I can see the appeal here. It'll appeal to a really different audience, I think, than some of the other N products. You see the Kona N, that might be somebody who wants an SUV but something that's a little bit fast. The i30N, sort of like that enthusiast purist group, and now that they've got a DCT automatic available, it appeals to more people. I think this i20N is great for some. I think there's a lot of younger drivers who want something that is track capable, but also can be used as a daily without having to buy an absolute bomb. And then I think there's also might be some people maybe my age or a little bit older that want something similar as well. It sort of appeals to a couple of really like little niches there. I think, Mandy, this would actually be a really great car for you because I know you like this kind of thing, manual shift, track capable, really solid dynamics. And you can get them in a few different colors. It's really well spec'd as well. You've got navigation, Apple CarPlay, wireless phone charging, blind spot monitoring, all those kind of things. The only option is paint. So you can get a contrast black roof, which is about $1,000. Other than that, you're fine. It was a really, really great little car. And the sound this thing makes out of this engine, like, you know, the i30 N line isn't a bad sounding car, but the way that this variable exhaust, I don't know if you guys have driven N cars before. I think, Mandy, we did a hot hatch comparison a few years ago where the i30 N just stayed in N custom mode. So everything was loud, but this doesn't have adaptive dampers or anything, but I just found myself always putting it in end mode. So I just got that full exhaust sound. And,
wow.
You know, it pops on upshifts. You drop it down a gear and it's, you know, it overruns a little bit. And it's just something that you haven't really seen in cars like this for a while now that we've moved to turbocharging and emissions regulations and all that kind of stuff. So, people have already mentioned in the comments of the review that I've been very, very positive. I mentioned in the review myself, acknowledging, because I'm very self-aware, that I probably was glowing a little bit about it, but it's because I enjoy that car that much. And I think also because I haven't driven anything that's really excited me this way in a while. Mm. You know, so I know a couple of people already that have either bought one or are interested in one. And I think that if you can get a test drive of this, if you're hearing about this car and you're sort of looking at a Fiesta or waiting for the new Fiesta to come, because that'll be a really good comparison to line up when that comes in a few months. If you're looking at a Fiesta and looking at a Polo and you've sort of seen this i20, and you're like, oh, you know, maybe I could get around that, have a look. Definitely take it for a test drive. You probably don't need that Kona Elite that you're looking at or the Kona N line because you're like, oh, I want something a little bit small and sporty. Look at this. If you can drive manual and you want something a little bit different and you want something that maybe you might take on a track day and you think, oh, am I going to be covered? Yes, Hyundai's warranty covers you for track non-competition track days. Take this for a test drive. Have a look at it. I probably sound like Croft with my hands and saying how everything's amazing. it just feels like a really complete package. And I think what I said at the end of the review, and this is how I'll close off this segment as well, is that, you know, the way that this car behaved, considering how cheap it is, and also it's the first i20N they've ever done, it felt like a car that's had years or generations of development and, you know, honing. And it's a testament to what Hyundai's N performance division has been able to do in such a short period of time. They did such a good job with the i30N to begin with. And this i20N just really, I won't say it completely nails the brief because I haven't driven it on the road against competitors properly yet. So I'll save that call for later. But they've nearly nailed the brief or just about nailed it in terms of what they set out to achieve. It's fun. It's fast. It corners like an absolute demon. And it's priced well and it's got so many features.
How much is it, Joey?
It's $32,490
really?
Plus on roads. Yeah, so it's bloody cheap as well,
wow,
considering how expensive everything's getting. So it's $200 more than a Fiesta ST and $400 $200 more expensive than a Fiesta and $400 cheaper than an Polo. But I think the new Fiesta might be a little bit more expensive. This is also a European-made car, mind you. I think it's made in Turkey. So props to them for doing this. And I think it deserves to get a lot of love. I know that there's a really growing fan base for Hyundai N products in Australia now, similar to how we're seeing a big following of Ford ST and Volkswagen GTI R. So, you know, again, sort of what we were talking about before in the news segment about more choice and all that kind of thing, the fact that they've even bothered to do this in the first place is amazing. And the fact that the product's good fundamentally and, you know, should appeal to a lot of different people, awesome. So I can't wait for you guys to drive it and let me know your thoughts because I'm normally quite a harsh marker. So I would love to hear everyone else's thoughts when they get a chance to drive it because I really enjoyed it. So the score I gave it ended up being an 8.6, which, you know, maybe,
yes,
you know, some people call me Mr. Korea because I love Hyundai and Kia products so much lately. They've all been really good, but it's because the product's good.
Exactly. Yeah, you're telling the truth.
Exactly. Like, you know, there was once upon a time that everyone thought we'll pay by Volkswagen and Volkswagen puts out good cars. Hyundai and Kia are doing the same. Mazda's doing the same. So many brands are doing the same thing at the moment, all in different ways. And, you know, the fact that this car exists is a blessing. And I think that if people should really give it a go, if you're nervous about it, read the review, you know, have a think about it, go to your local dealership and buy one. Don't just do it on my advice. Have a drive. And if you like it, buy one because yes, this was such a fun thing to drive and I'd actually love to get more wheel time. So yeah, really good thing.
Awesome. Well, that's we've got to keep talking about that. I love this little thing and I haven't even seen it in person or driven it yet. So, yeah, that little pocket rocket, head to carexpert.com.au and check out JY's review. Okay, if you have any feedback for us at all, that email address once again is podcast@carexpert.com.au. What cars can we look forward to for next week, JY?
So Melbourne, we've got a few interesting things coming up. We've got our first taste of the Hyundai Tucson N-Line, but we're getting that in elite diesel spec, so not quite top of the range, but I know a lot of people are very keen to hear about that car. So we've got that. We've got a mini JCW I think it's a three-door hatch, so the top-of-the-line performance version of the facelifted Mini. We've got a Suzuki Ignis, something a little bit different, and the updated Land Rover Discovery, which I'm excited to see as well, because there's that's obviously a very iconic nameplate, and there's a lot of upgrades that have gone into this midlife facelift, which should be interesting to see. We've got a Lexus RX 300 in Sydney, and then in Brisbane, they've just come out of a Kia Sportage GT line, which I booked for them so that they could see how great it was after I reviewed the launch version. and they're also driving a Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross Exceed plug-in hybrid. Quite a mouthful, and my limited lung capacity is not appreciating that one. But yeah, so quite a diverse garage this coming week.
Fantastic. All right. Well, that is a wrap. Thank you so much, James Wong and Jack Quick.
Thank you, Mandy. You.